David Abramson, the psychologist in private practice, always walks in just when we need him most. So Nutty's having a breakdown, David, because she's not allowed to hug anybody anymore.
Howard.
You are.
Let me just make it clear. I'm not a medical person. But from what I have read, and when one looks at the facts of coronavirus, what is going on? I think the most infectious thing at the moment is the hysteria.
Yeah, no, definitely is. Doron says, please can we just go back to talking about Guptas?
Yeah.
I'm yeah, virus of a different kind, absolutely. Yeah, it is completely, completely mad.
It is. I really, you know, if you look at the statistics.
Yeah, you David,
know,
I mean,
again, it's very, very ironic for a psychologist to be saying, let's go look at the statistics.
Yes.
But the bottom line.
And are you not saying, as a psychologist, guys, pull yourself together?
Well, which is because very strange.
This is what I feel like you're saying,
and
David.
And I kind of am, which frightens me as well. But I think there is this, if you look at, the amount of people that have it, you look at the severity of coronavirus, you look at the people who are dying of coronavirus, it's definitely the people who seem to be much more vulnerable or had a predisposition, where they had health difficulties before. Mm, mm. And the huge majority of people are recovering. And this sounds like flu. It sounds like...
No, well, I think, David, I think it is. I think that the contagious aspect of it is something that that people are worrying about. And just to give you the numbers, because I am a little obsessed, 95,416 people, total confirmations in the world at the moment. Of course, the leading country, 80,409 in mainland China, 5,766 sufferers in South Korea, 3,089 in Italy, 2,922 in Iran, 331 in Japan, 285 in France, so that's become a big, it's getting a, becoming a big area. So is Germany with 262, Spain 222, the US 159 people, Singapore 110, Hong Kong 105, I think very well contained actually there in Hong Kong, considering its proximity to mainland China, 90 in Switzerland, 85 in the United Kingdom. If we take a look at Israel, Israel is at 15, Lebanon at 13, Iceland 26, but I think that's most of the population. I think there's only like 33 people there, so that's quite high. So it goes. Africa at this stage 3, by the way, New Zealand. So clearly that Maori thing's not working. The Maori greeting is not working particularly well. Egypt has 2. Of course, Russia only 3, but we believe that like we believe Iran's figures. Time is 8:13. I'm Howard Feldman. There is no doubt, David, that when we look at what's happening in Australia, I mean, they've lost their minds completely.
I think most of the world have lost their minds. Howard, there's no doubt. And I was listening to Anton Meyerberg, Dr. Anton Meyerberg, yesterday, and certainly this is it's a virus. You know, from what I understand, it's obviously it's contagious, but
highly contagious.
Highly contagious. I was listening to Dennis Prager last night, and he had written an article where, he had done some research where 20,000 people had died of the flu, of the normal flu, in a year. I think it was the 2017 and 18 flu season.
Right.
20,000 people had died from your common cold, which then became obviously worse, pneumonia. And isn't that frightening? But we don't concern ourselves with that because we know about the flu. Everyone gets the flu, but this is something new and we don't know about it. It's unpredictable, but we don't stop to actually, measure our response to what it actually is. And I understand, absolutely, it's contagious. I understand that people don't want to get it. But is it really as bad as we are reacting to it? Is it disproportionate?
So I'll tell you the sense that I get. Is it disproportionate? Well, what's interesting to me is Israel's response. Mm. Because Israel is not a panicky country. You know, we sat in studio, I think last week or the week before, with a guy that was involved with the Entebbe mission.
Right.
And I said to him, did you think that when this was happening, that this was an event that was sort of this turning point in your life? And he said, well, we were just doing what we had to do, you know. We went home, and then the next day we went on something else. It was just what we were and that's kind of very Israeli. So when we see this type of reaction happening in Israel, there's clearly a concern, and I wonder what it is that, and perhaps it is a fact that we actually don't understand this virus yet. They're figuring it out. You know, they're saying things like, for some reason, kids aren't getting it. For some reason, it hasn't come to Africa yet. There's a lot of for some reason, but there actually isn't the detail around it. And perhaps because of the newness of it, and I read an article yesterday, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, about it having, you know, the two different types of strains and mutate. I don't know what's true or not true. Right. But the point is that there is so much that we don't yet know about. And I think that's the fear, along with the speed with which it is. And people in China were very, very ill, you know, and I don't think we can ignore that. I don't think we can ignore the fact that 80,000 people in a matter of weeks were very ill from this disease.
No, absolutely. I think for me it's not, and it's interesting because, you know, the topic today we're talking about being optimistic.
Absolutely.
And I think being optimistic is not about walking around with your head in the sand and denying that there are issues in the world and that there are problems. It certainly isn't about that. So sure, it's important to look at the reality of a situation, understand the enormity of it, but at the same time, thinking about it in a rational way, and we can, you know, go into more detail about that.
We're going to do exactly that when we come back. I'm chatting with David Abramson. He's a psychologist in private practice. How do we remain optimistic and positive whilst at the same time not bury our heads in the sand and ignore everything around us? We'll be back just after this. Karen M. says, Howard, I think that some of the hysteria about coronavirus is that it helps us to take our eye off the ball and to stop thinking about our serious local problems. At least with Corona, we focus on worldwide problems. Such an interesting comment, and I think so true in many ways. It almost normalizes us in a completely abnormal sort of a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. Sure, you know, but I do still think, and as I say, I'm going to stand by it from a psychological perspective, that, you know, I think a lot of hysteria is making the situation worse.
Well, yes, as I said in my News 24 article yesterday, for Australians, I think there's a greater danger of them dying from a stampede at the supermarket trying to get toilet paper than from the coronavirus.
I think you might be right. I thought you were going to involve kangaroos.
They're not the danger. It's the Australians and two ply.
Yes. I don't know what to say, Howard. I just don't.
All right. So David, with all of this, how do we remain optimistic? Because and positive? Because it really is difficult. Look at the South African situation. Yeah. Look at what we're dealing with here. Look at what the world is dealing with, in many ways. But, you know, it's so difficult to focus on the fact that, you know, things actually are a lot better than they ever used to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're living longer.
Yes.
You know, the technology is just advanced hugely. Some for the positive, some for the negative, but mostly for the positive. I mean, we really are in a better place as in many respects. But I think again, you know, saying that, technology has played a very big role in disseminating information, which I think sometimes is too much. And we've said this often during this hour, that sometimes too much knowledge is causes hysteria, causes anxiety levels to rise. Sometimes we don't need to know every little bit of information and every statistic that's coming out. And I think what's very important when we look at optimism in the world, you know, we in the psychology world tend to look to positive psychology. A well-known figure who started, who kind of, we say invented positive psychology or started it, one of them was Martin Seligman.
Martin Seligman, yes.
And he has written a number of books about this, And really what he says is that optimism is not something that is, I mean, you can be born a more optimistic person, but this is something that you can teach your children and that you can learn through life. And he really, and I think it's really the cutting edge of understanding optimism, his theories and his programs around it. He talks about understanding our explanatory styles. So how we explain and interpret events that are happening to us in the world. And very importantly, how we explain them and help our children to understand them. And he has done studies over many, many years that shows that people who are more optimistic, who look at the world in an optimistic way, are much less prone to depression and anxiety. And as I say, it's been proven by him. They have done these studies. And it might sound very simple, but really it's about how you explain often adversity to yourself.
So it's the story that you tell yourself effectively.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the most important things he talks about, when, if you want to put it in inverted commas, if bad things happen to you, people are more, who are more optimistic look at things as being temporary. Like, this has happened to me.
It's so interesting. Move on. That, yeah.
This is not a permanent.
I certainly know that as a fairly optimistic person, that's generally how I've looked at life. Mm. Is that, yeah, this is not a great situation for now, but this is now. And it's not always going to be like this. And it will get better.
And it sounds so simple, but it's, our thoughts are so powerful. And that's one of the tenets of his, his program is to actually be a lot more aware of how you think about things. If you think about, I mean, maybe Zanati was talking about prison.
Right.
You know, if you have been given a life sentence and you are not, that is a permanent situation. And of course, that's going to lead to psychological difficulty.
Right.
Emotions being, leading to depression, anxiety. But very much so, if you can focus on the temporary nature and really believe that a situation is temporary rather than this is how it's always going to be.
Right. So that's one aspect is that. The other aspect, and I mentioned that in my article yesterday, was having a strategy that is about priorities. You know, and if I looked at the life of my grandparents, they came to South Africa as refugees having lost everything, their entire families, and their priorities were to rebuild, they got married, they had children, to feed them, to grow this family. That meant that there was no indulgence almost in the little things. I'm not saying that they were perfect by any means, and not to say they weren't damaged. They were highly, highly damaged, and they were highly impacted, of course, on the tragedy that they had all suffered. But there wasn't time, I don't want to use the cliche, to sweat the small stuff. Because they knew what was important and what wasn't. And to some extent, the world that we're living in, I think, is very blurred. Because as important as, being healthy is what you look like on your Instagram photo and how many likes you get. So the priorities are completely out. We're as outraged by Kim Kardashian wearing braids because she's culturally appropriating something as we are by the rape of a young woman. We've lost all semblance of measure.
I agree with you completely that this loss of perspective about what we need to worry about and what we don't is often lost. And I think for me, it comes down to, again, you know, having an optimistic view of the world. And
No, because Marion says, and I want to ask a question so that you can answer, you know, say the next part whilst answering. She says, can negative people really suddenly be positive? I don't think positivity can be switched on like a light. I myself battle with it.
It's not about just switching it on like a light. This is a real, real undertaking.
Work.
It's work. And another one aspect of this is people who talk about things from a global perspective, like it's all encompassing. So there's something that's just specific. So, you know, often hear people say, you know, well, let's talk about children. You know, my teachers are just so unfair.
Right.
You know, it's not that your teachers, I'm not going to point let's just say theoretically Mrs. Cohen.
Right,
you know,
right.
Mrs. Cohen is unfair.
Right.
And again, you think, oh, geez, you know, that is so simple. It's so small. Mm. But when you walk around saying that the world is unfair,
right.
that, you know, that everyone is unfair,
right.
that everything is unfair, you know, it has a significant effect on your psyche and how you view the world.
I use the example in some of my talks, and I say you do badly at a maths test.
Yes.
What is your response to it? Is it Mrs. Cohen is unfair? Is it I suck at maths?
Right.
Those are all negative outlooks. Or is it I didn't learn hard enough?
Correct.
Or this paper was a really hard paper.
Right.
But it's not always. It's not, I'm terrible at maths. It's not taking it. In other words, it's limiting the negative. And the other thing that, that we often say to our children, we're driving to school and they've left a cricket bat at home.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, you shouldn't have left your cricket bat at home, we say, you always do this.
Right.
And then we get into a fight and our kids get out the car and we're upset and they're upset and they drive off. And what do you say to yourself? Why did I react like this? I always react like this. And that cycle of always continues instead of limiting that negative.
To what it really is.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
think that comes down to a lot of other things like parenting. You know? And we always say in parenting, play the ball, don't play the man. And what we mean by that is, you know, if a child is misbehaving, could, you know, address the behavior. Talk about how the behavior is upsetting you. Not the child, because really, if we start to attack the child, the person, you know, it becomes such
that.
A personal negative effect, and it affects self-esteem and confidence. And again, people might roll their eyes. People might say, this is so simple. This is such, how can this have an impact? It is, and very much like the listener was intimating, this takes a lot of work and a lot of awareness. But boy, are the
rewards
huge, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a matter, and we'll talk about it just after the news. But it's really a matter of changing the dialogue that we have, firstly with ourselves, and then with others. Let's talk about that. And to some extent, that's really what we're talking about, because it is about perspective, isn't it? Because one thing that we've said, we started off by saying is, in order to be positive, one needs to.
Well, I think
change the dialogue.
Yes,
and then
I think the first step is awareness and understand your explanatory style, as Seligman would call it, how you interpret events and listen to the thoughts and language that you use. You know, as we said, do you kind of say everything? You use this totality kind of language.
You always do this. I'm terrible at maths. Instead of limiting the negative and saying, and if it works the other way around. So you do well in a math test and you say, well, I was really lucky. So you limit the positive.
Exactly. And it does work, you know, the opposite way around when you, and I mean, obviously you can, we don't have to get into details, but I think the other thing is very importantly is to teach your children about their explanatory style, how they think about things.
Do we need to teach our children, or do we need to model different types of language?
I think both. Mm. I think, you know, we will always say when it comes to parenting, no matter what it is modeling is the most important thing. Kids will respond to what they see. And you can teach them whatever you want in a very practical setting, in a logical setting. But if they don't see adults around them doing it, especially their caregivers, then there's very little chance that they're going to take it on. And how often have you heard your child say, but you don't do it, but I don't see. So absolutely, very, very important that we do model these things for them as well, but also teach them, because
So it's a matter of changing that dialogue completely and making people, making ourselves and our kids. And if it becomes something in a household, in a family, that we limit the negative to what it actually is, and we don't, and we don't discredit the positive, that becomes a way of thinking.
But very, very interesting, Howard. This is not about, and, you know, again, it sounds like a cliche. Certainly when we talk to children and when we look at adults, this is not about not having failure in your life or not having adversity in your life.
No, of course not.
It's actually vital in order to be an optimist. It's not about seeing everything as wonderful and just missing difficulties. It's optimists are people who are able to have failures and who are able to look for the positive.
Who
in
can
babies,
fall and get up?
Fall and get up. It is, you know, from the mouth of babes. You know, a friend of mine's son once. Mm. You know, we were just talking around a Shabbos table, and he said, you know, even when you're falling forward, you're moving forward, which is so profound.
Yes, yes, it's lovely.
And
yes.
It sticks in my mind. So I think very importantly to remember that optimism is a skill. It really, really is. And that everyone can learn it. But as
Marion says, it's not a light you can switch on. It's work. It is hard, hard work because you've got to deprogram yourself. And it might come from a very, very deep-seated childhood place that's how you grew up.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it is a lot of work. And I think just because you're feeling bad at the moment, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to have any negative feelings. So for example, what I do, a practical thing that I do, if something happens, I give myself 2 days to kind of wallow.
Interesting, I do the same.
To kind of wallow in self-pity.
I never go for 2 days, that's excessive. But I will give myself a period to say, okay, yeah. You know what, I'm actually going to, it's interesting because we've often had this conversation at home because if somebody's actually starting to feel really bad, I say to them, go with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just go with it. Right. Lie down on a couch and
feel
let
the feeling.
It wash. Mm. Oh, don't fight it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that does not make you a pessimistic
person. No, because it actually is quite the opposite. And it's actually interesting how much the opposite it is. Somebody once said to me in my family, they said they're scared to do that because they're petrified that once, if they feel that, it'll never go away. No. And right. And I kept saying, no, it will. That's the point. You know it will. So, and that's, I guess, the argument between an optimist and a pessimist and positive and negative is that I guess I know that I'm going to go with it. I'm going to feel terrible, whatever it is. But then I'm actually going to feel okay.
It's actually, as you say, completely the opposite. If you keep it inside, it never goes away. Mm. It stays inside and often becomes bigger and overwhelming. But when you let it out, often, in the majority of situations, it becomes real and it becomes, but when it becomes real, people think, oh, it's real now, so it's going to overwhelm me. But actually, often it becomes more something that you can manage because firstly you get perspectives from other people and secondly because it's out there you feel like it's now not completely part of you. Mm. It's external and it's such a relief. It can be such a relief. And again, very important, it's not about denial, as we're saying. It's about understanding one's thoughts and how one's thoughts affect one's emotions, and then how one's emotions then guide you in life. And I think really I'm not a big I walk into exclusive books or into bookshops and I'm really I have to admit I roll my eyes at some of the
all the positivity books
but really
it was hard for me to say because one of them smiled. Smile, damn it. Yes,
and that can
but
be
that's
bought
a good one.
Yeah,
I mean,
that can be bought at all
that is available now at all
awesome. But right. But I would say besides Howard's book, which I have read and I think is very useful,
well, I even quote you in it quite a bit.
Thank you, Howard. But I do think for me Martin Seligman's books on optimism, are really not these airy fairy books. They are very practical. The one called Learned Optimism is really based on a lot of years and years of study. And the other one is The Optimistic Child, which is teaching your child.
Is that his as well?
That's his as well.
Oh, interesting.
And, I would certainly recommend them. They're worth a read.
All right. We're going to come back to wrap this all up just after this. All right. So, David, let's just wrap up this. It's a massive topic. It's not a huge topic that we're not changing anybody's lives in a radio interview. What we are trying to do is just get people thinking about a different way in terms of positivity, in terms of the narrative that we have in our own minds, in terms of the language that we use. Give us just a few takeaway points.
Okay, number one. Mm-hmm. I would say just be aware, just for a day or two, just be aware of your thoughts. And as we've been saying, identify your explanatory style. how do you look at things? How do you explain things that happen to you?
Right.
And, you know, if you notice that it's more pessimistic, and as you said, we kind of talk about things in extremes, then change it. Then be aware of it. And obviously teach your children about it. But I think the most important thing is to understand that there is a clear link between thoughts, feelings, and actions. And it might sound so simple, but it is so impactful on your life and the way that you lead your life. And
the connection between thoughts, feelings, and actions.
And very, very, okay, and two further points. Mm-hmm. The last one being, let's do a last one.
Right.
That optimism is a skill. It's not something that you only are born with. This is something that you can develop over time. So more practice.
And it's not just feelings.
Not just feelings.
Very importantly, that was, I think we need to make this point, that it's not about denying negative things, bad things, difficult things that happen in your life. It's how you interpret them, how you explain them to yourself.
So
that
yes,
that's what an optimist is.
Absolutely. In yesterday's article, the heading, News 24 changed it, but what was meant to be that optimism is a strategy.
Absolutely.
It isn't something that we just feel. All right, time is 8:51.